Today on Doomed, we're talking Zoom on Doomed. Tonight on the show, we have Jack Morse, a security and privacy tech reporter, to discuss all the issues going on with Zoom, that video teleconferencing app that, if you're not currently using, you've certainly heard about before. This thing has taken practically the world by storm because of the coronavirus pandemic and people being hunkered down in their homes. An app that keeps everyone connected while we're all stuck inside? Sounds good, right? Well, not so much. Let's get right to it and start talking about why Zoom can really suck, to be quite frank. Let me pull him up on the screen here. There we go. Let me give him an introduction now that he's on screen. Jack Morse, tech reporter focusing on cybersecurity and privacy at Mashable. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, man, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I just want to say, Mashable, I haven't heard of that place before. Where, what is that? What is that company? What do they do?
Yeah, I believe they cover, you know, tech and culture.
Right. I think I'm familiar. I think I've heard of that place before. Oh, right. You're my coworker. Right.
To get that out of the way, we have the pleasure of working together.
Right. Well, the pleasure is mine, I should say. I'm a little, people notice I'm running a little bit late today, a little bit flustered. The kids would not go to bed tonight.
It's almost like the pandemic can throw off everyone's schedules, including children's.
Right. And speaking of schedules being thrown off, I feel like with everyone hunkered down at home, tech has tried to step in and keep everyone connected, keep everyone receiving their food and their whatever else they need at grocery stores or places like, you know, a Rite Aid or a Target or whatever, you know, your basic necessities. And, you know, we're going to focus on Zoom today, but there's a few companies I wanted to bring up to sort of get us to Zoom. And that's because as we depend on these tech companies to sort of help fill the role, whether it be connecting each other online or providing us with the ability to get this sort of this food and other necessities delivered to us, a lot of them are dropping the ball in terms of just basic humanity, in terms of how they're treating the small businesses and the workers who keep them running, to be quite honest. I mean, we've already seen the Amazon strikes that are popping up across the country. I've seen small businesses like local owned takeout places and restaurants. I'm not sure how widespread this is, but I've seen flyers they tuck in with their deliveries now. So when a Seamless driver or an Uber Eats driver drops off your stuff, you get this little flyer that says, "Hey, I'm glad you discovered us on these companies, but we should let you know they take a shit ton of the percentage of what you pay us. So please, now that you know we exist, it would be quite helpful to us if you just order from us directly now." And then also you have companies like Instacart who, you know, treat their workers as independent contractors. And then I've seen this story where apparently people are tipping Instacart workers a ton of money in the app up front, which you can do. And apparently, I've never used these services before because I'm anti this whole gig economy stuff. It apparently bumps up your order because the Instacart worker wants to deliver it to you and provide a better service to you to make sure they get that good tip. And then after they deliver your toilet paper expediently, people then go in and change that tip to zero, which is incredible that they allow you to do that. So that independent contractor just busted his ass for you and you're giving him shit in return.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Yeah, that specifically I've seen as well. I think the example I saw was people were promising a tip of larger than $50, and then Instacart allows you, I believe it's 3 days, to alter your tip after the completion of the delivery. So somebody says, okay, I can prioritize deliveries based on tips because it's not like my per delivery fee is very high, you know, payment from Instacart. And then, you know, unscrupulous and frankly immoral people are, you know, then removing that tip after the fact. Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Right. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because these companies, I feel like they, you know, like those restaurants and takeout places said, you could order from them directly. There's ways, you don't need to use these services, people. I mean, some folks might have to if they live in like a food desert and they don't have a car and they don't want to take public transportation. I get that. But for the most part, if you're just using these services because you are too lazy to pick up the phone, please pick up the phone and order directly from your local right. small businesses.
Right. And I would just say that, yeah, if you have the ability to pick up and place a phone call, you know, some people, there are some accessibility issues there, but if you have that ability, then by calling the restaurant directly and by pulling their number off of their webpage, not through, you know, Yelp's webpage or something, you know, then those restaurants aren't paying that huge commission to companies like DoorDash or whatever. So more of your money is supporting your local restaurant, the people living and working in your community, and all you have to do is pick up the phone.
Right. I mean, it's shocking to me. When this first started, and I know this is not the, we're not sticking with these companies for the show, but I just got to get it.
That's right. Well, hey, I'm an opinionated person, so.
Right, right. I just remember so well that when this really first started and people really had no idea what to expect, and then about a week in when it started to get like sort of like, okay, this is what we're going to have to do. So like things are going to change. This is like a life-altering event for pretty much everyone across the world. Seamless came out with this and Seamless is owned by Grubhub, who owns like menu pages and all these other companies. They put out this statement saying, like, oh, to the small businesses out there who use our service, don't worry, we'll take care of you. Your payment will be deferred. And I just could not, like, just to let people know, they're not lowering their commission. You know, I get if, you know, but it would be really nice. I mean, this is a very, this company made a ton of money off of small businesses who probably don't even make a low single, you know, like a point something percentage of what they make off the backs of these small businesses who do that. Here's a company that could have said, for the time being, we will take no percentage of your, we'll take no commission, or have the commission, or lowered it to like something nominal just to keep things going, like 1-2%, you know. They decided to just say, we'll defer the payment. Basically, if you can't pay us right now, when you come back to work, or when things are back to normal, we're expecting you to start paying us all that money back. Like, we're not letting you off the hook.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in the mayor, so I'm based in the West Coast. I'm living in and reporting from San Francisco, and the mayor of San Francisco recently announced it. I think this was late last week, but don't quote me on that one, that they were capping, you know, I believe it was commissions at 15% for companies like DoorDash. And it was funny because I think the day before, DoorDash announced that they had planned to do something like this. And obviously they had been in conversation. Now, I don't know this. I'm just saying it looks to be obvious. They had been in conversation with the mayor's office and knew this was coming. But yeah, so it seems like when, you know, those ideas that you were talking about, Matt, when those do happen, when people talk about reducing the commission, it's because, you know, local officials sort of force their hand. Right. You know, they back them into a corner. Yeah, because because people are annoyed and frustrated and angered at those practices.
Right. We had that idea the whole time. We were just gonna do that.
Yeah, what weird timing.
Damn. Butterscotch. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned you're on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast. The wonderful world of the internet enables us to be coworkers, yet for the past 2 years now, I've been here almost 2 years now, and you've been here before me. For the past 2 years working together at Mashable, we have never met each other.
And never met in person.
Right.
It's wild.
Right. And the reason we could do that is because of wonderful technologies like video teleconferencing software and apps and platforms. And since this whole pandemic, one specific service has somehow risen to the top and has become synonymous with that whole niche, that industry, in the same way Facebook is synonymous with social networking, Twitter is synonymous with up-to-the-date, real-time posting, Instagram is synonymous with photos, you know, YouTube with videos, the list goes on. Zoom has somehow become that service, and it's incredible to see.
It's become essentially a verb. You know, you would say, I'm Googling something, right? To imply or to let someone know that you're looking up this piece of information. You know, I think we're in the early stages still, but it's become a verb in the sense that it's like, oh, I'm Zooming with my colleagues, or I'm Zooming with my grandparents, or my cousins, or, you know, whoever else that you'd like to speak with and see, but you can't because we're all sheltered in place.
Right.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing to me is there are so many, you know, big established companies, and listen, obviously, on this show, I talk very much about the issues with major corporations, but there are certain things that major corporations, when it comes to this sector, when their success is so tied in to the user experience,
right,
that they are beholden to the users. It is weird to me that these services drop the ball. Like, you know, Google has Google Hangout. Microsoft owns what we're using right now. I use Skype to run connect with my guests on this show because the software I use to stream has a Skype integration directly. But Zoom somehow skipped over these companies.
Yeah, it's wild. And the story of why exactly that happened, I don't think has been told or written yet. I will say it is surprising. I mean, you know, Zoom was founded in, I believe, in 2011. You know, it's a San Jose company, and their product was originally designed as an enterprise product, meaning, you know, this is companies and people within companies to video conference with each other. So the CEO or some accountant has a meeting with somebody in, across the country, right? Not mom and pops or, you know, friends or whoever trying to have a cocktail during a pandemic. You know, so their product was designed with the former use case, not the latter use case. I think part of the reason that it has taken off in such a way is it's kind of really easy to use. It's platform agnostic. And by that, I mean, you don't have to have a Facebook account. You don't have to own a Mac product. You don't have to have a Google account, though some of that I believe might be changing or have changed. But so why exactly Zoom is the one, who knows? You know, frankly, I think some of those things that I just mentioned certainly helped it, but it's definitely a surprise. And it definitely caught Zoom by surprise. You know, the CEO, Eric Yuan, I believe is his name, just did an interview with the New York Times last week, I want to say, but it was definitely in April of this year. And he was talking about, you know, the security issues, which we're going to get into. But, you know, he himself expressed surprise at Zoom's popularity. He himself expressed surprise that Zoom had become the tool of the moment. And, you know, I think that if the CEO of the company can't see, you know, their own product taking off in such a way, it's definitely a surprise to us as well. Or it makes sense why it's a surprise to us as well.
Right. I mean, doing podcasting close to a decade now, I've always heard people say, other podcasts, I use Zoom to record my podcast. And I was always thinking, like, why are you doing that? I mean, there's so much, so many easier ways to do it. Like, Zoom is not meant for that. Primarily, it's an enterprise level application. It was meant to connect businesses with other businesses, or in our case, you know, a business with their staffers or employees across the globe. It was meant for that sort of internal use case. It wasn't meant for a customer to customer or family to friend or friend to family, you know, family to family. And it just, I mean, I guess the CEO said it himself too, but it just baffles me that this company has done this, because let's get to these issues, because this is why it matters.
There are a lot.
Is why it matters. Now, you actually wrote one of the earliest pieces I saw, certainly the first for Mashable since the pandemic started, but easily one of the first pieces I saw that broke down the security issues with Zoom from the very beginning. And more obviously have come out since you wrote this piece.
Sure.
But let's start there. So early March, I would say this is when we started at Mashable, started to work from home. It might have been like the first day they told us to work from home. But the rest of the country wasn't working from home yet. You got into this piece about the privacy issues with Zoom.
Yeah, well, I will say that, you know, part of the thing that I write about and that I think about a lot is privacy. You know, it's one of the main beats that I cover. And I think a lot about the way that, you know, we often just by the, and again, not everyone, but, you know, a lot of people who have desk jobs or work with computers or interact with technology, which is a lot of people, the amount of privacy and information that we give away simply by using these work mandated tools. So, you know, like Slack, for example, is something that a lot of media companies use. Mashable is one of them. It's a communications tool. You know, and Slack's actually a pretty good company privacy-wise, more or less. They have a lot of problems. So, you know, but, you know, like I've spent a lot of time digging into, you know, the privacy implications of this. Like I've written a lot about how, you know, if you take a work device home, you know, you basically don't have, like your boss, your employer can legally turn the camera on in your home, you know, turn the mic on in your home, you know, anything you do on your work computer, even in your home, you know, your boss has the ability to read. So I'm always thinking about these things. And I'm writing about these things, and they matter to me, and I know they matter to other people too. Yeah, so I guess that's the setup with Zoom. And, you know, it's this company that offers a free version of its product. This is...
Uh-oh. You froze there, Jack. I'm going to have to recall... This product. You froze there. Sorry about that. Oh. Just take us back to, you know, right when you started. Zoom's a free product.
Oh yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, as I'm,
Skype has been given, you know, everyone's using the internet right now, man. Like the whole world is practically online because everyone's home.
Well, I was just saying, you know, Zoom, they've changed this, but they initially started as, you know, everyone got 45 minutes for free, right? So all these people are discovering this product and their friends are saying, hey, Zoom with me, whatever. But a lot of people are unfamiliar with it. Because, you know, as we're talking about earlier in this conversation, it was designed as more of an enterprise product. There's a lot of weird enterprise tools in there, meaning these are things that your boss might want to keep tabs on you, right? And again, this is sort of, I look at a lot of these products like this. It's like, who is the person using this and where does the power lie in that dynamic? And the person who has the power, you know, how would they want to use this to control their employees, right? So with Zoom, there was one thing that really stood out to me, which is called attendee attention tracking. And what this is so you're in a Zoom meeting, your boss is hosting the meeting. They can tell there's a feature that enables them to tell if you stop paying attention, essentially. So, you know, while your boss is lecturing you about your poor performance or your colleague's great performance or, you know, whatever, if your boss or your company or your CEO is droning on and you stop paying attention and tab over to the other window, after 30 seconds, it can alert the meeting host that you've stopped paying attention. Right. And, you know, this is something that probably, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, well, of course, you know, the company is tracking you, of course, whatever. But it's like most people don't think about that stuff. You know, right. Most people aren't really thinking that, hey, if I stop, even if I have the window on my screen, but I click on another one, that my boss is going to know. You know, that's just one example. You know, I was going through all their privacy policy stuff, and, you know, they have a frequently asked questions page, right? So it's their attempt to break down the legalese of the privacy policy to where someone, you know, the layperson can understand it. And, you know, I get to this section that's about what Zoom does with your data. And the question is, you know, does Zoom sell my data? And the literal response is depends on what you mean by sell. Or I think it depends what you mean by sell is the direct quote. And then they go into some explanation about how they might give your data to third parties, and some people under certain conditions might consider this a sale, blah, 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 blah. You know, so these are just some of those early flagging issues. It's what is Zoom doing with your data? Well, it's not exactly clear. And what sort of privacy do you maintain and do you have when you're forced to use this for work or when you decide to use it, you know, in your personal life to communicate with friends, family, loved ones that you're now separated with? So I wrote about that.
Right. No, that is incredible, though. That, I mean, I guess it's almost not surprising, because obviously, as someone who works in covering this sort of stuff, and also very, you know, compared to most people, very tech savvy like yourself, it's not surprising, but it's still surprising. Because the idea that these companies are tracking you in some way is, you know, it always is like, well, duh, but also like, man, what the fuck? Like,
yeah. And the well, duh attitude is not helpful. It's condescending. It's
right.
You know, it's people you know, it's people who don't spend their entire lives thinking about this stuff, which is fine. There's lots of things I don't spend my life, entire life thinking about, right? And if I'm interested in it or I learn something new, the thing is not to tell me, well, duh, you know, idiot. You know, the thing to say is, yes, this is what's happening. If you'd like more information, here it is, you know. So, you know, I have these conversations with friends who are, you know, my age, my peers. I have it with older family members. You know, I try to communicate this stuff to them in a helpful way that hopefully is not condescending, hopefully is valuable to them.
Right. Yeah. And for a lot of people who aren't like, you know, like you were just talking about your friends and many people I know, my friends, my family members, especially, you know, I'm sure that's with everybody. You know, these things that may be obvious to you or me or other tech savvy people are not obvious to them. And like you said, too, it's no, everyone's got their specialties. Everyone has something they know better than someone else.
And I would say a great example of that is, you know, early on, I spent probably too long doing this. But when Zoom was sort of popping off in March, you know, and I'd written this article and I was like, well, how, you know, like what? This is such a weird system because there's a meeting ID, which is like a 9 to 11 digit. And so now I'm getting in the nitty gritty. Sorry, but this is important, I promise. So if you haven't used Zoom, there was this thing called a meeting ID. There still is. It's a 9 to 11 digit number that you would send, you know, to your friend or your colleague or whoever. And you'd say, plug this in. And it's basically the equivalent of, you know, like a phone number for like a party call, right? So you plug this in and then you can dial into our meeting, right? Now there's the option to set a password on that, but this is back in March, right? But it was buried somewhere in the settings, which meant that if you had this meeting ID, pretty much anyone could get in the meeting. Now, people are post, you know, you can do a Google search. There's like a prefix, like a string. There's for the links to the Zoom meetings, it's like really common. It's really easy. You just look at a Zoom meeting and say, what is the first, like, how are all these set up? Or the URL for the Zoom meetings, right? And you can just search on Google. You can search on Facebook. You can search Trello boards, which is like a task organizing tool, which is often open to the public. And you can just see all these Zoom meetings. And I'm like, well, okay, I guess I can drop into Zoom meetings if I want, random people's Zoom meetings. But, you know, I'm not a, like a troll or a, you know, like a Discord, you know, troll Zoom bomber, which is something we'll talk about later. So I didn't really initially grasp the possibility for harassment there, but I did know that there is a possibility for a privacy breach because I don't need someone to jump in my family call and start yelling, you know, slurs at my family for me to be offended if someone was in my video call watching like a conversation with my partner or with my parents or something. And the fact that this stuff was open was really sort of kind of bonkers to me, you know, and people who are public in the public eye and have a lot of exposure, you know, were making these mistakes. You know, I actually wrote an article about Jonathan Frakes, Star Trek. I don't know if you're a Star Trek fan,
but I grew up watching more of a Star Wars guy.
Star Wars guy. Okay. Yeah. Well, I grew up watching The Next Generation and there's a character and I love that show. Yeah. Right. And there's a character on there, Commander Riker. And the human being, the actor, not the character, Jonathan Frakes was on a big Zoom call with a bunch of other actors from that show and, you know, took a photo of the computer screen and put it on Twitter. And everyone was like, oh, this is so cool. It's all these, you know, these actors coming together. The whole cast of the show coming together. It was very cute and very adorable. But you could see the Zoom meeting ID in it. You can plug that in and see that it's a recurring meeting set up by LeVar Burton, who's one of the actors. And you can see what time the meeting is. And so you say, okay, well, next Sunday I could jump in on this call.
Where is this, you know, again? Like, where is this information, like the...
Right. Okay. So I guess, So a little more context. And this has changed. So I can explain how some of these things have changed. But this was sort of the initial setup, you know, the powder keg that sort of blew up. When you were on a Zoom call, you know, you're looking at your computer screen, if you're doing it on your computer, and there's a bunch of different, you know, tiles or grid views. So it's like, I can see, you know, my cousin, my buddy, my dad, my whoever, and myself, right? So there's all these little different, so you can see all your friends at once. And then at the top of that, it says the meeting ID. And it is labeled meeting ID. So it's right at the top of the screen. So if anyone takes a photo of their screen or takes a screen grab and shares it on social media, and it's like, look at this great call I'm having. I'm having drinks with friends during the, you know, pandemic or whatever. We're all sheltered in place. That meeting ID is visible.
Right.
So, or at least it was. So that was that information. And people were, you know, I mentioned something called Zoom bombing. I'm sure you want to get into this, but people were taking this information and abusing it, essentially.
Right. We'll get into that shortly. I want to actually stick with the employers being able to track you with this, because
sure.
The idea that you need to literally be active in that application seems preposterous. I mean, I can tell you right now that when there is, I'm assuming that's what the how it tracked you. Like if you were doing something else in like your Chrome browser or whatever, it would assume you weren't working.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it alerts. I mean, I can read. I have the text in front of me. It's, but yes, essentially, yeah. It's basically a way of, you know, alerting your employer that you have in some way disengaged with, you know, activity.
Right.
Basically,
I can tell you right now that when there is a meeting, and it's not some short thing where everyone just really quickly, you know, gets their thing out. If it's gonna be a long thing, I engage in other apps to do other work while I listen to other people speak. I think most people probably do that a long meeting or something.
It's totally fine. And it's like, oh, heaven forbid you like read the New York Times for a minute or two. But it's not even that. It's like maybe, you know, a different work communications tool like Slack or like email or whatever, you know, sends a message your way and you realize it's pressing. And then all of a sudden you pivot over to address that. And then you, because you're not being called. You think you're being a good worker, but then you're, you know, good worker bee or whatever, but then your boss doesn't know that you're slacking someone. So they just get the little pop up on the screen that says, Matt stopped paying attention to me, you know? And so it's a very weird sort of, thing that a lot of people are expecting. Yeah.
Right. We had a little blip there, but I caught everything you said, you know, Skype, man, this is why you got to step up.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Skype's got to step up and get their act together. I mean,
It's the bastion of technology and I can't even get a good internet connection.
Right. Right. But let's talk about also the other aspect of Zoom, that piece you wrote early on. What was the second part again? I wanted to bring something up, but then we got off track and now it lost. Just remind me.
Well, they're what they do with your data.
Right.
So they're sending your data to third parties.
Right.
You know, and that sort of thing.
Right. And you didn't even need to be, frankly, connected to, for example, your Facebook account or even have any information connected to Zoom or Facebook or even have a Facebook account to begin with. Correct me if I'm wrong. For some reason, Zoom was just sending all this data over to Facebook and other companies like that.
Yeah. So my understanding is, and I think it was, I believe it was Motherboard, you know, Vice's Motherboard wrote a great piece about this, but my understanding is that the app, I think it was the iOS app specifically, was sending your information to Facebook, which is very bizarre. Yeah. So let's say you don't have a Facebook account at all. Not even that you're not logged in. You don't even have a Facebook account. You download this app on your phone. It's a Zoom app, which is not owned by Facebook, right? They're separate companies. And yet it is sending your information to Facebook. Now, after there was an outcry in Zoom, you know, they said they pushed an update that changed that. So that is theoretically no longer happening. But of course, it makes you think, you know, what else is going on? What other data is being shared? And if that only got changed after there was a public outcry, it's like, well, you know.
Right. And I just want to point out that, you know, there are plenty of things that I think were purposefully done that we're going to talk about that Zoom screwed up on. But then there's also something like that where, obviously, if you don't have a Facebook account connected, whatever data they were sending to Facebook probably wasn't enough for Facebook to build some sort of profile on you. Am I wrong about that? Really?
I mean,
were they sending like full names and?
I mean, it depends. Yeah, it depends on what they're sending, right? And I don't know offhand. I would need to pull it up, but like if they're sending a unique device ID or something to that effect, then Facebook can match that with information it has about you. You know, so that company, Facebook, can draw a lot of inferences about people based on like a lot of things that, you know, it's a super data hungry company. We all know this, right? And they have a sort of unimaginable amount of information and ways to draw inferences about who people are and the connections to other people.
Right, right. What I was trying to get at was
sorry.
No. I'm glad you brought that up because it's important. I think there are things, I think malicious is the wrong word for it, but there are things that were done with the intent to do so. But I think this Facebook thing, it seems to me like an example of a company who just lazily threw shit together because it was, they weren't, we're never going to deal with any problems with this because we're just business to, you know, corporate heads talking to corporate heads. This issue will never come up because it will never be used in mass by ordinary people to talk with whoever. It was just like, to me, it seems like one of that specific thing seems like one of the issues with Zoom not being up to what people are using them for.
Right. Yeah. It's a product that was designed for one thing that is, you know, or designed for one group of people rather, or one subset of people, and is being used by a totally different and much larger subset. And yeah, that's problematic. Right. It's shown itself to be problematic.
Right. So there's another piece you wrote that gets into Zoom bombing, and I want to let's move to that, because I think this is something that people probably hear and they think, oh, you know, it sounds harmless, like photo bombing, right? And yes, I'm sure there's a bunch of very funny Zoom bombing videos out there, and you know, I could care less if like the heads of ExxonMobil had their Zoom conference interrupted by a bunch of people shouting Baba Booey or whatever else. I would actually support that endeavor. But let's talk about that, where Zoom bombing is actually a real problem. So first of all, what is Zoom bombing?
Right, great question. Yeah, so essentially, you know, we were talking about those meeting IDs earlier, right? Those are the, you know, you can think of them again as like the phone number, the code that gets you access to the video meeting. And if you're having a chat with friends, or if you're having, you know, an AA meeting, or you're having some other kind of meeting that typically would be in person, but because, you know, of the coronavirus, people are not meeting in person, and you have this meeting and you want to get a bunch of people together, you need to send out this meeting ID to everyone, right? So everyone has this meeting ID. But you, just because everyone has it, doesn't mean the meeting is open to the world, the entire world. So Zoom bombing is when, you know, people who were not the intended recipients or the intended audience join, essentially crash a meeting, right? But instead of just hanging out and being creepy, you know, and just kind of watching, they actively disrupt it. And again,
which is worse.
Yeah, well, they're both bad. They're bad. Yeah. They're bad in different ways, right? But, you know, the Baba Booey example you gave is, again, like kind of like funny. But I think a lot of, you know, a lot of people were contending with stuff that was maybe less funny. So, you know, like the AA meeting example I gave is a real example, you know. And there are actually a real example of a meeting being held on Zoom and people Zoom bombing, crashing this meeting and disrupting it. And there are ways to force a Zoom call for everyone on the call to see, for example, let's say I'm one of these bad actors, right? And I crash this meeting and my intention is to essentially, you know, troll it, you know, cause I think it's funny or whatever. I can force everyone to view my screen, right? So I can have hardcore pornography playing. I can have, you know, like the Christchurch shooting video playing. And these are like real examples of like pretty awful things that people do. And, you know, and some of these, you know, first of all, that's all like incredibly disturbing. But then you're also talking about some of these groups are maybe people who are like their trauma groups or people dealing with violence, and they're trying to have like therapy sessions and things like this. So it's like there's some really sensitive and personal information and personal, you know, meetings that are happening that are being bombed, Zoom bombed. Right. And I've actually seen this happen. There's a group, there's a great, actually he's sort of a tangential colleague of ours over at PC Mag, because we're both owned by the same parent company, Michael Kahn, I forget, I apologize, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, K-A-N. He did some great reporting where he actually was hanging out in these Discord groups of guys that were coordinating Zoom bombs, and he was watching them do this in real time. So they were getting these meeting IDs, planning it, and they were streaming this, right? And they'd go into these what were classrooms, and I saw this, right? I saw this happening, not in real time after the fact, but the elementary school classrooms where it's like a bunch of children, like literal children, in like a Spanish class, and these guys will get in and just yell like extreme profanity and just like really vulgar stuff. And, you know, in examples I didn't see, you know, they're apparently, you know, playing pornography and things like that, which I think is, you know, can be pretty traumatic for obvious reasons, right? For the participants. Yeah.
Right. It's, you know, and I think there was one I saw, I think even you might've wrote about it. A guy jumped into a Zoom where they were school kids and he was just nude. He was naked.
Yeah. So, Quick clarification on that. That was a different video product. It wasn't Zoom.
Ah.
However, you know, that product, and I forget what it was called, frankly, because it's a much smaller one, but it had the same problem, which was that anyone could get in these meetings with just the equivalent, that product's equivalent of the meeting ID, right? So this person was able to essentially guess the meeting ID. And yeah, it was a naked man, you know, who was, I believe, you know, started to be vulgar, but I believe he was, you know, essentially touching himself. And it was a bunch of children who saw this. You know, it's very obviously super traumatic and fucked up, pardon my language, and really upsetting.
Oh,
and,
no, you could do that on the show. You could.
Yeah. That's super fucked up. And I think that, you know, those are the kind of problems that when you design this enterprise software, you don't think, hey, some pervert is going to expose himself to a bunch of school children. You know, that's probably not, I'm sure that is not what anyone thought, you know, either this other company or Zoom.
I got to tell you, funny enough, if I was creating an enterprise product, I would know that there was a significant number of perverts that would be using it.
Sure, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Like, that's a guarantee. I mean,
but it is super, yeah, it's super messed up. You know, I guess that's just the internet. Like, people will fuck with you in any way they can. But it doesn't, you know, we shouldn't make it easy for them.
Right. I mean, it's something, and again, it's something that these big corporations that make software for the broad user base thought of in advance. Like, if you try to enter a Google Hangouts, you need to be connected to the Google account that specifically receives those Google Hangout invites. You can't just get the Google Hangout invite and go in. If you try to, actually, it says, oh, are you in the wrong account? Switch to the proper account. Or it says, should we send a message to the Hangout event organizer to see if you're allowed in? It doesn't just allow you to go in because you found the link somewhere.
Right. And Zoom has, you know, to their credit, they have tried to rectify some of these mistakes. And they've pushed a bunch of updates. I think, you know, the Zoom CEO said recently that they were sort of pausing all their new feature updates and they were putting all their engineers on security stuff. And some of those were, they made passwords default. And by that, I mean, you now just, if you just have the meeting ID, that's not enough to get in. You now need a password. Now, again, that's not foolproof, but it's better. It's an additional step. They added something called waiting rooms. So like you were talking about with that Google link, now if you have that meeting ID and the password, you're in, you know, the digital equivalent of a Zoom waiting room where the host still has to choose to let you in. They've pushed an update recently where they're taking the meeting ID, again, that's that like access number, off the top of the screen, so that if you do take a screenshot or you do take a photo of your desk and share it out in the world, that it's not immediately visible to everyone. So, you know, they're trying. I think they're admitting that they screwed up. Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, when you have like hundreds of millions of people using their product, like a small screw up, it can have pretty big ramifications.
Right. And I think that's the crux of a lot of what's wrong with these tech companies. I mean, listen, if we were talking about a one-off minor or even a medium-sized issue with a company, listen, these companies are all made by, there's people behind these companies, sure, and people make mistakes. I get that. But there's this whole ethos within the startup, the tech startup world, and Facebook is probably one of the biggest proponents of this ideology. I'm pretty sure they actually might have coined this phrase. Mark Zuckerberg himself, you know, you just build it and if something goes wrong, then you fix it then. You just build fast and break it or whatever. I forget exactly what he said.
Yeah, move fast and break things.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. Now listen, like, again, like, there's certain things where, like, you know, if you're creating a application to have a Spotify DJ room with your buddies, you can break shit. Nothing terrible is going to happen if something goes wrong there. If you're putting together a little application that organizes people's web browser bookmarks and you do something shitty there, you know, it's not the end of the world.
The stakes are different.
Right, right. But can you imagine if in the real world you were a student sitting in a classroom and a naked masturbating man just walked into your classroom? That would be a huge issue.
There'd be hell to pay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. As there should be.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I made that point that Zoom is trying, you know, they've made some security changes, but I will also say that is after a cascade, you know, of negative press. I was, you know, they got caught in a lot of different ways, one of which I think is pretty particularly revealing. You know, this speaks to the sort of, I think, you know, arrogance of a lot of these companies. The Intercept did a great bit of reporting where they took a look at Zoom's encryption, right? And so Zoom was advertising its calls as end-to-end encrypted, which, you know, means essentially, right? You know, Apple talks a lot about this, you know, a lot of companies talk a lot about this. What it means is basically, if I'm talking to you via the product, via Zoom, right, then only you and I have access to this content, basically. That's a simple way of, you know, the short way of describing it, right? So it's kind of what you think of as like a gold standard for privacy, right? We're simplifying things here a bit, but they said, hey, we're end-to-end encrypted, which is good, right? That's a good thing. Sounds great.
Like we were talking before, someone who's not so tech savvy probably has come across that word before and they hear encryption. Yeah. Oh, that means secure. Yeah. It's safe.
They correctly think that that's a good thing.
Right.
Right. But it turns out, you know, and this again was the Intercept's reporting, it turns out that they weren't actually doing that. They were using a form of encryption, but the way they had it set up was not end-to-end. You know, and the way they had it set up was not inherently bad. I mean, it's less good, to be clear, than end-to-end encryption, but they were misrepresenting themselves. You know, they were misrepresenting the security and privacy of their product to people explicitly, and only, you know, addressed that when they were called out on it, you know? So, you know, that to me doesn't instill a lot of confidence, you know, and I'm, you know, maybe you'll want to talk about this a bit later, but, you know, I try not to use Zoom, frankly. You know, I use other products because I do video conferencing too. You know, I'm a human being, like I'm sheltering in place and trying to be responsible. I don't want to be responsible for other people's death. You know, I'm trying to take this very seriously. But I'm starved for human connection, man. So right. I'm doing the video conferencing, but you know, I don't use Zoom because I don't, you know, for many of the reasons that we've discussed.
Right. I mean, I would love for Zoom to get their act together and become a legitimate, you know, just a full opinion here. There's no proof of the matter other than obviously they're dealing with security issues. You know, I question their ability to take care of other things, sort of like Facebook and Google and YouTube and these other companies deal with, you know, the idea of the app being used for malicious purposes up front, not someone jumping into a meeting and doing it. Like literally like a meeting being for the purpose of malicious intent. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to sort of, I guess, you know, these are private meetings. They're supposed to be at least. So it's harder to, I don't want them to be listening into people's meetings, but you know, these are big tech companies who are supposed to find solutions to these sort of things. And I also don't know how much they think of, you know, other basic issues in terms of, you know, basic social good and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they, you know, social good for Zoom probably doesn't align with like their balance sheets directly. So they probably haven't considered it too extensively.
Right. I mean, this company's got to be making a ton now, though. I mean, they had to listen, because a video teleconferencing app, just to have that up and running, like it's probably one of the most server intense sort of operation you could run. Besides maybe something like YouTube where you're live streaming and then also saving all that shit on the server.
Yeah.
This has got to be like second only to that. So, I mean, it's got to be a money-making operation or if not, a well-funded operation.
Yeah, I imagine, and I can't speak to the specifics of that because I don't know, but, you know, I imagine they're doing quite well. You know, their server loads are probably huge. There's a spike in free users, right? But, you know, I don't feel bad for them. Let me put it that way. You know, their stock has gone way up. You know, they're definitely the company of the moment. They are now a household name. To go from a relatively obscure video conferencing app to, you know, relatively obscure, right? There were enterprise clients using it. But to a household name in the span of 2 months is pretty remarkable.
I mean, the idea, like literally a worst case scenario for them is they run out of money, go under, and then get paid hundreds of millions of dollars from like Google or Microsoft buying them out. That's the worst case scenario. These guys are going to be rich through whether they are a success or whether they fail.
Yeah, they'll be fine. I mean, yeah, they've been around long enough. I'm sure they have an established business model. They're not going anywhere.
Right. So there's something, I guess the next thing we should talk about is some, let's get back to some of these bugs. Actually, I don't know if we've discussed any straight up bug yet. Maybe the Facebook one falls under that, but I'm not sure. But there was apparently a legitimate full-on bug, because there's obviously no application to this, where people, hackers, were able to use Zoom to steal people's Microsoft passwords, like their Windows passwords.
Yeah. I'm not super clear on how that exactly worked. Did you do some reporting on that?
That was not mine, no. I think Stan.
Our colleague Stan in Europe. Yeah, you know, I unfortunately don't know the specific details on that. It's almost like there's so much shit going on that I can't keep up with it. Which is ridiculous, but it's true.
We have covered, I feel like you, me, and Stan, who is another Mashable Tech reporter, we have covered separate Zoom stories within like the same like hour or two.
Yeah, and they are, to be clear, different stories. We're not re-reporting the same thing multiple times. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's wild.
So I actually covered one where they were secretly mining LinkedIn data and sharing it with users. Now, this one to me was extra interesting, because basically LinkedIn has this extra service, I guess you have to pay for, because LinkedIn is the business social networking site, called the LinkedIn Sales Navigator. And apparently it's a way for a sales team to it's like a sort of LinkedIn hosted CMS type thing, where you can basically manage how you contact people if you're a sales rep for a company. And what Zoom was doing was it connected with LinkedIn's Sales Navigator. So a user had to be both using Zoom and a Sales Navigator subscriber. And if you were in a Zoom chat with this person who was also subscribe to the LinkedIn product, Zoom would give that person your LinkedIn profile name, your employer, where you lived, all the Zoom profile information. And they did this even if you weren't using your real name in Zoom. Now, one story I saw, I think it was the New York Times, when they were covering this, they said they had a reporter who was trying to speak to a source anonymously. And this person happened to be the source, happened to have Sales Navigator. And Zoom told the source who the anonymous person was because it found their LinkedIn information.
Right.
And it did not, to be clear here, it's not like Zoom said, by the way, we are letting the people you are in this chat with know your LinkedIn information. So you could, the spin there, I assume, would to sell this as a cool feature so they can connect to you on LinkedIn right away. Not even that, not even the spin on why this is there. They just did it without the consent of what it seems like any of the users.
Yeah, that's totally wild. And again, that comes back to when you have a product designed for one group of people being used by another group of people. But yeah, the fact that, you're not signed in via LinkedIn, you give Zoom a different name, and yet it's able to make that connection between you and your LinkedIn profile and then share that information. That as the example that you gave, that could potentially reveal an anonymous source if it's like a group Zoom call. There are real repercussions and ramifications when this type of thing is not fully thought through. It can be dangerous, to be blunt about it. Like, me speaking with someone about like a Zoom privacy issue is not the most like sort of dangerous reporting, but there are types of reporting that put real people's lives online and at risk. Yeah. And that's, that's a nightmare. That is like a literal nightmare, like betrayed by your tech.
Now, speaking of the LinkedIn Zoom connection issue, we already talked about a Facebook one. We already talked about a LinkedIn one. There's one that you covered where I know these sort of things, these services do this feature, but for me personally, as someone who uses these services with the intent of 9 times out of 10 creating public content for consumption, I turn this feature on because I want it on. I want this to record my meeting so I can share the interview or share the content or whatever I've done. But you found something really interesting, and this is where we got Facebook, we got LinkedIn. there is now a Zoom YouTube connection, and I mean, it's, you could check this out yourself and be shocked at what you find.
Oh man, are you talking about the public videos
yes.
that are accessible?
Yes.
Yeah, so okay, so this is totally wild. And basically Zoom made it, you know, this is not only on Zoom, but basically Zoom made it very easy for people who are not technically savvy to endanger their own privacy. So basically, you know, if you so one of the features that Zoom offers is the ability to record a video meeting. And like you said, you know, there's a lot of people who record meetings for public consumption, and they do it knowingly, and it's all good, right? Some cases, not so much. So what Zoom does is if you're a paid user, you can upload your Zoom meeting to the cloud, and Zoom secures it securely on their servers or the servers they run or whatever. But you can also save it on your computer. And a lot of people, a lot of companies have their local recordings saved to their computer, saved to their computer network, uploaded to the cloud, their own personal cloud, right? So let's say it's a company and every Zoom meeting I have is uploaded to our server, right? Or I'm a professional running a small business and every meeting I have is uploaded to my personal cloud account, right? Well, a couple things happen here. A lot of those personal cloud accounts or personal services or whatever were not protected or not password protected in any meaningful way or in any way at all. And Zoom default saves every meeting with the same meeting or the same file name. And it's a specific file name that's unique enough that it's searchable. And why does that matter? Well, it means that if you search that file name on services like YouTube, you know, or Vimeo or Google or, you know, various other services, you basically find people that have, you know, through some sort of misconfiguration or misunderstanding. And because Zoom does this with these, they're all named the same, every file, every video is the same name. They basically put these recordings on the internet accidentally. And there's a very clear distinction between the ones that are intentionally on the internet and the ones that are accidentally on the internet. So the person who intentionally puts it up is like, hey, what's up? You know, I'm teaching a class on whatever, whatever. Like, this is the kind of service you'll get if you sign up for my class. Here's an example class, right? It's like a yoga class or something. It's like, okay, well, that's very obviously public and intentionally so, right? Then there's the other thing, which is real stuff that I've found, which is people's private recorded therapy sessions, you know, like the most personal, private, intimate stuff, you know, imaginable, short of, you know, nudity and graphic sex, but you know, I think in some ways that's way more personal, frankly. Yeah, and you know, this one is kind of like a 1-2 punch. Like, it's Zoom did a setup that is bad, you know, or maybe lends itself to being you know, lends itself to problems, and then people are sort of making this mistake. But you know, if you there, the way I look at it is, you know, if many people are making the exact same mistake with your product, then, you know, maybe there's a design issue, you know. And yeah, so I mean, it's just another thing. It's like, you know, are these people set up to fail? I don't know. You know, you can't put the blame on, you know, a grandmother who's maybe not using the configuration tools exactly right if there's something, you know, if she's set up to fail in the process.
Right. I mean, there just has to be, you know, more consideration in terms of what a regular internet user would find right. to be simple or not simple. Like, there's you just assume right away that, oh, everyone wants this shared on YouTube. Well, that's not the case. Right. I mean, which is actually weird, because that actually goes against everything we've just discussed in terms of being a primarily enterprise based application. I mean, that is a bizarre user experience choice on their end to have the default be. I mean, from my position, that would be wonderful that I would have not forgotten to save it to YouTube or have the event recorded. But I doubt the majority of people want that to be the default application of it.
Yeah. And especially, you know, especially people whose private meetings or whatever are posted online. I mean, I think I doubt those people even know that they're up there, frankly. It's not like people maybe some people have caught it and removed it, but you know, there's that stuff that's still up there. And you know, it's a shame, frankly. It is something that other companies have you don't have that exact same problem, right? Because, you know, some other companies, you know, who make other video chatting tools, you know, I don't know whether they thought that of that exact situation. I can't imagine they did, but they designed their product so that it wouldn't be so easy to accidentally post your personal therapy session on the internet.
Right, right. I mean, I see areas where this can be beneficial to you, me, my audience, for example, with everyone home and, you know, Donald Trump or Joe Biden talking to their funders via Zoom, probably.
Sure.
I'm going to be checking for those file names. Yeah. I'm going to be very respectful of all those people who are accidentally posting their therapy sessions and not look at those. But if I see Joe Biden or Donald Trump's mug show up, I'm clicking that shit and downloading it ASAP.
Sure. Yeah. But, you know, and yeah, I mean, fuck those people. But, you know, you don't want your grandmother, you know, like, yeah, you, those are public individuals. But, you know, your grandmother or your cousin or your pastor or whomever, you know, you don't want those people sort of exposed to, you know, sort of
unless your pastor is one of those famous mega church ones, and I also want to see that.
Yeah. I'm just trying to be inclusive here, you know. Yeah.
I want to see Joel Osteen's private Zoom conversation. Sure. See what that guy's saying.
The appointments on his private jet or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and there are the wild thing to me. You know, we were talking at the beginning of this conversation about, you know, how did Zoom get here? Like, why is it Zoom? Why is Zoom now a verb? You know. And I don't have an exact answer for that, but it is something I think about. And there are other services that don't have these issues. I mean, every service has its own, you know, different sort of drawback or plus or minus or whatever, but there are other options, you know, and it's wild. You know, there's, you know, even people know what I do for, you know, my friends and family know what I do for a living. And they know that I focus on this stuff, and I would never expect them to read everything I write. Then they would probably stop being my friends and family. but you know, like, I try to suggest other options for stuff, and some of them listen and some of them don't. It's always fascinating to me. It's like there are other things we can do that are free, that have the same functionality but don't have the same problems. You know, so I don't know. There are things out there. You know, you don't have to stop video chatting.
How is that open source one that I saw you write about, Jitsi?
Yeah, Jitsi Meet. I actually really like it. You know, it's I think the functionality is frankly great. It's JITSI, if people are wondering what we were just saying, is how it's spelled. It's an open source tool. I think it's been around for about 8 years. Don't quote me on that one, but I think that's about right. And it is also not end-to-end encrypted, but it doesn't claim to be, but it does encrypt calls. You know, and it has a lot of the same functionality as Zoom, meaning you can do video chats, you can have like a tile view, you can share your screen, you can share YouTube videos, you can upload, you can record and upload to a Dropbox.
And it works peer-to-peer, I assume, because it's open source, or do they have a...
I would need to look into technical specifications a bit more, but you can like call in on a phone also. Oh, so okay. I think they would run that through. That's maybe why it's not end-to-end, because they would have to run that through like a server that they're operating. But they don't collect your data in the same way that Zoom does. They don't share with third parties in the same way that Zoom does. You know, and the tool is great. Like, as long as you add a password to your call, you know, to your meeting, which is not the default, which I'm always like, come on, make it the default, people. Right. But as long as you add a password to your call, it's great. You know, I have conversations on that with friends all the time. Like, if I'm doing a game night with some friends, or I'm having drinks with some friends or something like that, that's the service that I use. Now, I'm all about privacy, you know. That's like something that I write about professionally, but it's also something that I very personally believe in. I think it's important. If I were to be having a call with friends, you know, with family, normal stuff like that, I would recommend Jitsi Meet. I think it's great. I've written about it. My name's Jack Morse. You can Google that and the word Jitsi, and you'll see like a how-to article, you know, on Mashable that I wrote, like how to use it. I think if you're having a call with, you know, your NA counselor, or you're trying to have, you know, cyber sex with your partner because you're estranged and you're in a long distance relationship, you know, or if there's something, you know, you're talking about your medical history with your doctor, there's like an extra layer of scrutiny that I think products should be subject to if you're using them for really sensitive matters right. like that. And I would say that there are some other options that I would recommend for those more, personal digital video chats. But yeah, Jitsi's great. I like it a lot.
Right. And another reason I think to look at these other alternatives is that Zoom is now going to be in the eye of people who want to use it to do harm. They're going to use there's like malicious actors are now going to focus on a service that's being used. I mean, they see all the issues. They see it's like imagine, you knew of a bank that everyone started putting their money in, but the bank forgot how to properly set up locking the safe. Obviously, yeah. It would attract a lot of bank robbers.
Yeah.
So,
and that's totally right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So even if Zoom gets it together in these upcoming months, it's still going to be in the eye of people looking to break it. And until then, it's going to be like anything goes. And one thing I've been covering, actually, is how malicious actors are taking advantage of Zoom's newfound popularity, the confusion around, oh, where do we find this site? Where do we find get on Zoom? To basically try to phish people, hack people. There's been a lot of reports of Zoom domain names being registered in an attempt to fool people.
Right, of course.
I'm working on a piece right now. I'm not worried about give you guys a little sneak peek on how, frankly, in my opinion, dumb it is that a service this big and huge is running off of a .us domain name. It is basically, it's practically begging grandma to type in the wrong thing.
Sure, zoom.com or zoom.net or zoom.se or zoom.me or whatever.
Yes, exactly. And it's basically just asking for trouble, because all you need to do is find a good lookalike domain name, which, again, not having not using a .com makes it even easier for malicious actors. Find a good looking domain name, set up a site that even vaguely looks like it could be from the company, find these public meeting addresses or where people are saying I'm using Zoom on Twitter or Facebook, which everyone who's using Zoom now is sharing they're using Zoom via photos, screenshots, or whatever. And right there you have the method of doing it, the marks and targets, and from their social media information, you can find out exactly what you want to get out of them if there's something specific. I mean, it's practically anything goes right now for people who want to use this stuff to do harm.
And there is real potential for harm there. I think that's an important point. And there's like the general phishing and there's the spear phishing. So there's like, I can set up a lookalike site pretty quickly. Again, you said with one of those other URLs, right? And then I say, oh, to log in, you just enter your Gmail, right? And then people are like, oh, okay, I can log in with Gmail. Great. And then I now have people's Gmail accounts. Well, why does that matter? A lot of people have their banking passwords, their phone passwords, all that stuff set up to password reset. So if I get your Gmail, I can control your bank and I can take all your money. Whereas you were saying is even more specific. So you can see who's had Zoom meetings on social media. You can create essentially, fake meetings and target them specifically if it's people of interest with these fake Zoom accounts and steal their login credentials in a similar way. Yeah, it's wild.
Right. And to people,
I look forward to reading that story.
And here's a really interesting piece of information. It'll be in the story. It'll probably come out this week. Probably in a day or two, actually. I'm working on it right now. They own Zoom.com. I don't know if people in 2018, they got really lucky, because if they didn't buy it less than a year ago, just over a year ago, they bought it at the end of 2018. I guarantee you they would have had to pay a premium now. I mean, they already paid a premium when you hear how much they paid for it. But I mean, that they paid $2 million for it in 2018. Wow.
Yeah,
they're not. They are forwarding it to their .us domain name.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
What it is, and this isn't. This is again, the theme of this whole thing. I mean, again, there are certain things that I think were intentionally done and just bad ideas and everything, like lying about encryption or whatever.
Right.
But the theme is just constant fuck ups for not realizing what's going to happen in the future. And I'm going to assess that when you build this type of service, which is a fairly, you know, it's a fairly intricate thing what they've built here, and you built everything on one specific domain name, I bet it's real easy to be lazy about moving the whole system to a whole new domain name.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, we'll see if they ever decide to do that.
that would seem like the good time to get on top of that.
Yeah, potentially so.
Right. So, yeah, Jack, is there anything else that you want to, any other major catastrophe from Zoom that you've already seen or have seen and are working on right now?
I would just say, to your point, you know, about this not going away as a problematic thing, is exactly right. Zoom is the new kid on the block. It's the biggest kid on the block and has the most users. And as we've seen, it is not exactly dialed in on security. And so people are going to be taking swings at it. And those people are, you know, people trolling, you know, more malicious or less malicious versions of that, people trying to steal information, right? And this is going to be an ongoing problem. It's not going to go away just if you stop seeing 10 Zoom articles a day, right, in your newsfeed or whatever, it doesn't mean that this is no longer a problem. Just keep that in mind. And I would just say that, you know, if you and the people you want to speak with have access to iOS devices, like I'm not one of those people who is like a Apple super freak or something. That's not who I am in any way, shape, or form. But FaceTime, you got to have an iOS device or a macOS. Is good for encryption calls. It's good for private calls. But I would recommend over that, not platform specific, something called Signal, SIGNAL. You can use it on Android. You can use it on your iPhone. You can have it on a computer, and you can have true encrypted phone calls. They don't sell your data. They don't store a lot of your data.
Does Signal do video chat yet or no? Not. They do?
They do, okay. with a caveat. I would be using it all the time were it not for the fact that you can't do video calls from their desktop app, which is so frustrating. You can do it from your mobile device, right?
Right.
It's great if you want to call one person and talk on your phone, that's great, whatever. But, you know, if you want to have a bunch of friends and you want to do it on your laptop, you can't do it on Zoom. But yeah, I would just say, you know, when I made that reference about, you know, you're having your meeting with your therapist or your, you know, you're trying to have some cyber sex with your partner who's living across the ocean, or you're trying to, you know, talk to your doctor or whatever, you know, those really intimate, those really private things that you don't want anyone else to see, you know, I think Signal is your best bet, frankly. You know, I would just keep that in mind. You know, if you listen to all this and you think, well, why the hell would anyone use Zoom? It doesn't mean you don't need to ever video chat again. It just means you should be thoughtful about it.
Right, yeah. And in the same sense, if you have to use Zoom, do it for something where you don't, like, you're not sending any work happy hour where you're just shooting the shit and not saying anything. You know,
yeah.
Obviously, make sure you're not bad-mouthing your bosses and stuff like that. But
no, that is exactly right. Yeah, you're right. It's not an all or nothing thing. It's like, you should be aware of what you're getting into, and companies don't necessarily make it easy for you to know that. You know, like reading the privacy policy at Zoom is not a clear and easy process. You know, it's not something simple to do. But just be aware of these things, you know, and if you're using a work account, you know, for Zoom, and you're using that work account to run, you know, personal hangouts, you know, be aware that other people might have access to that information and know what you're doing. And just think about those things, you know. If it's a work account, a work computer, you're probably not the only one who can see what you're doing on it.
Right.
So keep that in mind.
Right. I still can't get over the idea that you would, that, I mean, they did, but that you would sell the spying on your employees as a feature. It's just incredible.
Oh, so now every company does that.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Right.
It's totally, totally buck wild,
right,
man. But most people don't think about it. Even, again, it's that, we talked about this earlier. It's kind of like a, oh, no duh thing, but that's not a helpful a helpful way of thinking about it. It's like, yeah, these companies they make their money because your boss gets some sort of use out of it, you know, and that use may be micromanaging you.
Skype is telling us, I think it's time to end the,
yeah.
Let me make sure I give you a proper.
I like the ramble.
Right, right. Luckily we work somewhere where it seems like we're safe if we were to drop something in the old Zoom chat that we don't want getting out there. Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, Matt, thank you very much for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. This stuff matters to me, and it matters, I think, to everybody now a lot.
Oh,
so
definitely,
I appreciate
man.
The opportunity to chat about it.
Jack Morse, tech reporter focusing on cybersecurity and privacy at Mashable. Thank you so much for joining me. And listen, everyone, go check out Jack's stuff because, I mean, I got to get you on this show every now and then. This shouldn't have been the first time you've been on the show because Jack covers, honestly, some of the most, and this stuff is always fascinating to me, some of the most offbeat security and privacy stuff that I've ever, like, you know, the Facebook, the Twitter, all that stuff is always really important to find out. But Jack somehow always finds the most offbeat issue, and I mean by offbeat, I mean something you would have never assumed, but still affects you. And Jack's so good at that. What's your Twitter account so people can check you out there and follow you?
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. It's I appreciate that. It's J Morse, Morse, and then there's an underscore, which, you know, that's because I had some random anonymous Twitter name a long time ago, and I was like, damn it, now I'm a reporter. You know, our more sort of public facing figure. So I got to make it my name, but Jay Morse is already taken. So it's Jay Morse underscore.
Right, right. Yeah. All right. You can't use be professional and use the Twitter name. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, random asshole.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Matt. I really appreciate it.
All right, Jack. Thank you. Stay healthy and safe there on the West Coast. I will see you in Slack.
Absolutely.
Take
Watch
care.
What you say.
Right, Roch. Always got to be careful. Take care, man.
Bye.
All right, folks. Here we go. The old Skype shut off. Bloop, bloop. You know, let's go to the second half of the show. A lot to talk about. Fucking Bernie Sanders, man. Trying to wreck my shit once again. Last week, I schedule a podcast/live stream for Wednesday, not thinking anything of it. Bernie Sanders comes out early that day and says he's going to suspend his campaign. Shit. Of course people want to talk about Bernie then. I mean, I had a great interview. I had a great, great interview last week anyway with Dr. Wesley Cheek, the disaster researcher who lives in Japan. People were very interested in that. But, I mean, Bernie tried to ruin it before it happened. Then, fast forward to this week, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to try to fit an extra show in this week. So let me schedule this one for Monday. I have this show scheduled with Jack for I think close to a week in advance. And Bernie decides to come out today and endorse Joe Biden officially. And, of course, everyone wants to talk about that. Once again, my guest backs me up and makes this show as good can be. So there's no regrets in having a non-Bernie Sanders episode. But Bernie Sanders tried to make shit difficult for me again. Bernie, man, what are you doing to me? I've been one of your strongest supporters, buddy. Don't wreck my shit, man. Come on. Come on. Not me, us. Aren't I part of that us? Folks, patreon.com/Matt Binder. That's how you could support this show. Every time we get a new patron, we lose a patron. It's like been this way seriously for... So we're just constantly, even though we're growing technically by having new members come in, there's someone who loses their job, which is totally understandable, obviously. I'm not complaining about you people not... who this has happened to you. You're not still giving me money. I'm just saying this is how the show is stuck. If you cannot financially support the show because of any reason whatsoever, especially if it's job loss via the coronavirus pandemic, please cancel that donation, that Patreon subscription, and do not give me what you cannot afford to do so. You can help the show by listening and spreading the word, which means more to me than anything. I had someone message me on Twitter saying how much they enjoyed white supremacist coronavirus pandemic episode I did a few weeks ago with Devin Burghardt. And this person said, listen, this is one of the best shows I heard, or something like that, or I really enjoy, meaning best episodes of Doom. It's not best shows ever, I'm sure. And I really enjoyed it, and I made sure I had friends listen to it because it was that good, and I feel bad I couldn't I can't afford to do a Patreon right now. Honestly, spread the word. Because if you can't afford to do the Patreon, to become a patron subscriber, but you tell 10 people about it, and two of them like it and become a Patreon subscriber, I mean, obviously, you see how that's a win-win-win for everybody. So patreon.com/MattBinder if you can afford to do so. If you cannot, you better be telling people about youtube.com/MattBinder, at MattBinder on Twitter, doomedpod.com just for the podcast version of the show, twitch.tv/MattBinder, anywhere you want to watch or consume the content this show gives you, that's the stuff you could push. Instagram.com/MattBinder. I don't really post on there, but if people started following me on there, I totally would. The main outlets, to be quite frank, is I view the doomedpod.com as a main outlet for people who just want to listen to the podcast. Along with that, youtube.com/MattBinder is the main live stream channel for the show. It also goes out over Periscope, which connected to Twitter. And everyone knows I'm mostly on Twitter, at Matt Binder on Twitter. And then there's also the Facebook page, search Matt Binder on Facebook. And then Twitch, man, people are really trying to sell me on Twitch. And I did a Twitch stream with No Comment Chick on this past Friday. Go to twitch.tv/NoCommentChick to check out our conversation. And, you know, Twitch seems really cool. And it seems like there is a growing leftist community on Twitch. But it's hard for someone like me who is still building this YouTube page, this YouTube channel. You know, I'm not that big on YouTube. And to try to focus on another platform at this point is I think, difficult to do. So I'll continue streaming to both. All these platforms, but youtube.com/MattBinder is the main one to build right now. We get building on this, and I think we could branch out to other areas. So folks, I forgot to last week, but I'm not going to do that this week. The people who make this show possible are our wonderful Patreon subscribers, and they are Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Amanda H, Andrew C, Andrew H, Angela, R.E.R., Baka, Ben, Benji, Bobby M, Brosnan, Champagne Kami, Chris F, Christine H, Cindy G, Colin R, Connor R, Cracker Barrel, C.T., Cynthia J, D, Dan K, Dank Uger, Dave K, Dave Z, David Z, I should say, Daya, Doug H, Douglas V, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Fraz K, Free Hat, FTW, Greywind, Greg D, Grim, Hitesh, Igor D, Jack D, Jameson, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeremy M, JLS, John B, John S, Jonathan B, Joseph H, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin S, Katie S, Kaushal, Lisa D, MC, Mariah, Mark S, Max W, me, Melissa M, Mitch V, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Dinks, NS, Nicole A, Namdenet, Null Style, Odef, Paul M, Penelope D, Qster, Rad Dad, Remy, Ryan, Scott R, Seth K, Sean H, Silicone Baby, Stephen R, Stephen S, Steve A, TM, Tamney G, Terrence R, Hypervisor, This Is Not Pizza, Tina M, Todd K, Tom M, Why That Thai Guy, Utopian, and Zoe G. All right, folks, see you in the second half of the show for live streamers, live stream watchers, I should say, and Patreon subscribers. Other than that, stay tuned to at Matt Binder on Twitter for when the next episodes are going to be. I'll be doing another episode later this week. Maybe even more than that. Stay tuned to see. I'm trying to do more under this whole pandemic situation. Everyone's home. Let's stream and have some good times together under the situation. Try to make, you know, a hard and sometimes, well, a lot of times depressing time a bit easier to deal with. Hopefully I help do that sometimes. If I don't, Maybe I'm just making things worse. The show is called Doomed, after all, and I do talk about some pretty shitty stuff sometimes. Sorry if that's the case. See you all next time on Doomed!